In ministry, we are frequently called on to encourage others and share words of comfort and hope. But what happens when the pastor's own family is in crisis?
Today on Real Family Talk, we'll meet a pastoral couple living and coping with a debilitating health challenge. How has this experience impacted their ministry and strengthened their faith?
Years ago, Pastor Charles Tapp went to a hospital to visit a church member. He had done that many times before and knew exactly what to say. This time, however, things were different because the member he visited was his own wife, Maureen.
Welcome, Charles and Maureen.
Glad to be here.
We're delighted that you could be here with us today. So tell us about how this crisis struck your family and how it developed.
Oh, my. About 12 years ago, as was shared earlier, I realized that something was wrong, very wrong with me. And in the span of about a week, my condition just deteriorated. Heaviness in the legs, loss of bladder and bowel function.
Oh, my.
Headaches. Dizziness.
You had numbness in your fingers and extremities.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Tell us some more about that.
It was challenging. She just woke up one day and said, listen, I can't feel my fingers. I can't feel my feet. And wow. She had problems walking. And so we decided to get it checked out.
That must have been so scary, though. Because
scary is not the word.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a bizarre thing when you, because we actually know each other well.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
We have children around the same ages. Well, and I remember we used to take our kids to school at the same time.
Right.
And I can't imagine what it would feel like to wake up and suddenly not be able to do the things that you usually just take for granted.
I think I must have been in denial because in spite of all of that, I told Charles, I said, I don't think I'll be able to drive to work today, but I need you to take me in because I've got lots of work to take care of.
And so, this is called what, NMO?
It's called neuromyelitis optica. And actually, it's been around for about 100 years,
but it was
called Devic's disease. And, of course, back then they didn't know a whole lot about it. But in recent years, with the research that's currently being done by several organizations, we're finding out a little bit more about it.
So how many people are afflicted with this disease?
It's hard to say. One of the things that was just shared with me recently, because I try to keep abreast of the research that's going on, is that in certain areas in Asia, you're finding a large population of folk who've been diagnosed recently with NMO. Here in the United States, again, it's hard to say, between 4,000 to 10,000, and usually it's because they've ruled everything else out. Fortunate for us, the Mayo Clinic recently, within the last 10 years, discovered a particular antibody that is specific for neuromyelitis optica.
How did it affect your family? I mean, you were talking about taking your daughters to school and all of a sudden not being able to do that.
Mm.
Well, everything changed, and it literally changed for us overnight. She said she woke up the next morning, you know, the day before, everything was normal. Mm-hmm. And then you wake up and you go, wait a minute, I can't move my feet. I can't feel my feet.
Right. So there was no progression, really.
Not at all.
With the illness. It was just a sudden impact.
It was boom. And then the next thing we knew, she had trouble walking. She went from using, a cane to a walker and ultimately being in a wheelchair just to get around.
What about work? How did that impact your job?
Oh, greatly. And I'm really thankful for the fact that I worked at a hospital because, as I said, I had to get to work.
Right.
And because
You're a nurse.
I made it. I am a registered nurse.
Yes.
Because I was able to make it to work. One of my coworkers literally ran down the halls looking for a neurologist while I was there in my office, saying, "You've got to see my friend. Something is terribly wrong."
Because, well, you're in the right place.
Exactly.
You're at a hospital, and people are heightened to symptoms.
They knew something was terribly wrong, and I credit this particular friend for saving my life, because the neurologist saw me right away, and he said, "We need to get you admitted immediately to begin treatment for this acute attack that's occurring as we speak." And had we missed that time period, I probably would not be able to walk at this point.
So it was that acute and that sudden and that impactive.
Very much so.
And they took care of you that day?
They took care of me. And the initial treatment, when you have someone experiencing an attack, solumedrol, steroids, and you have a certain time frame in which to get that treatment in. Otherwise, you have permanent damage.
Praise God.
And they were able to see me right away.
Oh,
we had a series of MRIs done, a lumbar puncture.
Same day.
The same day.
All those tests.
All of those tests in the span of 3 or 4 hours. And we really didn't have the opportunity to even process what was going on. The doctor came in and he said, "Boom, boom, boom, we've got to get this done."
Yeah.
Okay. And
well,
that was...
Charles, what were your thoughts? You know, your wife suddenly has had this attack, and you have 3 young girls that you're... I mean, what were you thinking?
Well, honestly, I didn't really have a chance to think. You know, I'm a choleric by nature. So I just went into take care of business mode.
Yes.
You know, I've got to fix this. I've got to talk to the doctors. I've got to make phone calls. And initially, she was misdiagnosed. They thought that she had MS, multiple sclerosis.
Because it kind of
mirrors.
Yes. Presentation's the same.
Right.
Yeah, but my thing was take care of business. Get on the phone. Call relatives, call family, call a mother, let her know what's going on, make sure the kids are all right, having consultations with the physicians, you know, boom, 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 boom. I didn't have time.
So did you take the kids to school that day?
I don't even remember what I did, quite honestly. All I know is I took care of business. You know.
Yes.
I'd love to know what happened with the kids that day.
Well, our middle daughter had just started college.
Okay.
So... That was taken care of. Our youngest had just started high school.
Okay.
Yeah. That was a challenge for her.
She had no idea
what
was going on. And I don't know if Charles went to pick her up. I can't remember. But she made it in. And why is mommy in the hospital?
Well, we'll want to find out more about that. In a moment, we'll find out how the Taps weathered the storm and what lessons they've learned on this continuing journey. Stay with us.
When Maureen Tapp was diagnosed with NMO, neuromyelitis optica, a debilitating and painful autoimmune disease, it also took a toll on everyone in the family, including her husband, who pastors a church with about 3,000 members. Earlier on, he wrote about it in an article in Ministry Magazine called "Preaching Through It: The Storm," or "Preaching to a Storm When Crisis Strikes the Pulpit Preacher." What an amazing story and experience. So,
I just read the article again recently.
Yeah.
I hadn't read it in years.
Yeah.
And as I was reading, I was saying to myself, I wrote this? You know, it took about a year to write it. And I started writing it because that was my way of dealing with it. And this is what a lot of people don't understand. When a member of the family has a disease like this, the other spouse becomes the caretaker.
Yeah.
And we learned very early on that she may have the disease, but we all had.
You all have the disease.
The disease in a way. So this was my way of coping with dealing with this challenge that had now attacked our family, because I was still pastoring.
Yes.
a church, had three daughters I had to take care of, had to take care of the house, had to take care of the bills, had to take care of my wife.
So had you done any of this before?
I had, yeah. You know, but I just had to do
more of
more.
It.
More,
all
of it. Pretty
yeah.
much, you know.
Yeah.
So this was my way. I would go in my study and just write a paragraph or two, put it away, come back to it a month later, because it took me a while to even begin to even want to even talk about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Because here's the challenge again, a lot of the attention goes to the person with the disease, yeah. and it should be that way, but they forget the other person, the caretaker.
Mm-hmm. Who people has to would, pick up the slack.
That's
people
right.
would ask me all the time when they would see me, how's your wife? How's your wife? I was just waiting for one day.
Somebody to ask you how you were doing.
For someone to come to me yes. and say, hey, Pastor, how are you doing? And it happened a couple of times,
yeah.
you know.
There's an expectation
yeah.
that
mm-hmm.
you're just the strong person.
Of course.
And
course.
That you can just handle it.
Of course.
But I would say also that even your initial response mm-hmm. probably also made people feel, well, you know, he's got it.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
He, you know, you had a very
and
organized
that's my temperament.
Way
yeah.
of
yeah.
dealing with
yeah.
it.
I mean, the choleric is,
yeah.
he's got it.
Yeah. You know about that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Get it
yeah,
done.
It's on the control.
It means necessary.
Get it
right?
done.
And there's nothing in your ministerial training
no.
To help you cope with this.
There's no class in ministry 101
I don't remember one.
To talk about yeah. how to deal when tragedy yeah. strikes. You just had to learn. I had to learn as I was, you know, going on with it,
yeah.
going with the flow.
Tell me about some of the main elements mm-hmm. of that article that you wrote.
Yeah.
What were some of the main key points?
Probably I had to first learn to be honest.
Okay.
Honest with myself. Honest with my church, and
yeah.
honest with God.
Honest yeah. about what?
I had to be honest and say, listen, I may be a pastor, but I'm not Superman. The S on my chest doesn't stand for Superman. It stands for sinner saved by grace.
Okay.
So I had to be honest, because of my choleric nature,
yeah.
I'm supposed to be in charge. I had to say, you know what? You don't have this.
Mm. And how were you able to do that? Because I know for pastors especially and
yeah.
the pastor's family,
mm-hmm.
we always think we have to present this front
That's
that
correct.
We're okay. So how
correct.
Were you able to show that honesty to your members, even to each other, to your
yeah.
girls?
Mm. It was hard, again, because of my temperament and
yeah.
because of my profession. But I had to lock myself away in my study. And just cry, like a baby. I would just cry.
So you were able to come
yeah.
to grips with what was actually happening
yeah.
to your wife and to you and
right.
to your family.
Mm-hmm.
So letting out the emotion.
Yeah. And then I had to go to the church and say, listen,
yeah.
I can't do this. There's no way I can be of effect to you in a positive way
yeah.
in the condition that I'm in.
So what really happened? How long did it take you to get back to preaching? Did you quit preaching? Did you allow your staff?
I quit everything.
Yeah.
I went to administration and said, listen, I need a sabbatical. Took 3 months away. And I can't even remember how all that took place now. I was thinking about it this morning. It's all a blur. But I said, listen, I can't do it. So I took 3 months away
okay.
from preaching. Did not even pick up the phone to call to find out what's going on. You know, and
well,
that, again,
well,
my nature, you know, and that was a struggle.
Yeah, it sounds like your church was very supportive.
Very much so.
Extremely
and
so.
I think what's really important here for our viewers, for other pastors watching this, and church members
yeah.
is to be in tune with what's happening to
yeah.
your pastor's family
mm-hmm.
and recognize that they're not perfect, but also the fact that you were willing to say,
that's the key.
To take this time out.
That's the key. I had to say to my church and be honest and be very vulnerable, which
yeah.
is difficult for us in ministry to do.
Indeed.
Say, listen, I don't have this.
Yeah.
And I've got to take care of my family first. And the analogy that I use many times is when you're on a plane before they take off, they say, listen, if we're ever in trouble, and the oxygen masks fall down, you put yours on first.
That's right.
Then
right.
take care of the person next to you. So I had to put on my mask
yeah.
first before I could take care of my family.
And also, before you can take care of the church,
let
them know that you needed some time away. And good for you that you had staff. Well, you know, you have a large church with several pastors.
Well, at this time, I was at a different church. We only had about 3 pastors on the staff, had about 800 members.
Okay.
Now, we're at a different church. But when I wrote this article, I was at this church, but when it actually was published, we had
transitioned
back
church.
To Sligo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you had some other lessons that you said that you talked about in the article. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you said is, if I'm going to make it through this storm, endurance will call for complete honesty.
Yeah.
Well, we just spoke about that. There was one other one. In our line of work, we spend a great deal of time in the same room as pain.
Yeah. Mm.
That's a powerful statement. Mm-hmm. What did you mean by that?
Well,
either one of you.
As a pastor, we always go to the hospital to visit. And a lot of times, and again, I had to be very honest in the article, that sometimes we just go through the motions.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going in to pray, read a couple of verses, God bless you, I'm gone. Mm-hmm. But when it hits you, it's a little different. And we're it's difficult for us to deal with that because we deal with so much pain in the hospital room. The funeral. Sometimes I can have 3 funerals in 1 week.
Yeah.
And if you allow yourself to be open to that, it can really work with you emotionally. But I had to deal with that pain and say to myself, yes, but this is my wife.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just another member in the hospital. This is the most important member of the congregation.
Because it's really sanitized when you are handling somebody else's pain.
Right.
I mean, you're a professional. You know what to say. You know what to read. You know what to pray. But it's a completely different matter when it's personal.
Yeah.
And especially your spouse.
Yeah.
The closest human on earth to you. How did you struggle with God?
Wow. That's a very good question. Because I did struggle with God to the point where I stopped reading the Bible.
Wow.
You lost faith?
Whoa. I did not lose faith.
Yeah.
But I stopped reading the Bible for those 3 months, didn't even pick it up. But what did give me courage and strength, I went back and read all of my sermons.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Next, we'll hear about one of the most difficult parts of this journey for Pastor Tapp. Stay with us.
When his wife's painful and debilitating illness launched their family into the battle of their lives, Charles Tapp had to come to grips with the fact that things would never be the same. One of the hardest tasks was telling their beloved church family in a Ministry Magazine article he wrote that it was the most humbling and difficult experience of all. Just before we went to break, you were talking about not praying or not reading anymore and that you had not lost faith.
Right. Never lost faith in God through the whole process, but I just could not pick up the Bible. I don't know why that was, but I did go back to my manuscripts,
okay,
of my sermons, and I started reading them. And I said, man, you wrote this?
Yeah.
It started, you know, the messages that I would share with our congregation that ministered to them were now ministering to me. So every day I would just go in my study, close the door, pull out a sermon, and just read it, and sometimes
you ministered to yourself.
Sometimes even pop in the audio CD, and I said, "Wow!"
Yeah,
and it ministered to me.
Yeah, how different that is. You know, it reminds me of a preacher back in Brooklyn, New York, many years ago, who would preach, and he would say, when he started preaching, and he would do his prayer, as I'm preaching, I'm also listening.
Right.
I would
say. Right.
So you were listening to yourself and listening to how you took the time to encourage God's people, and got encouraged by that yourself.
I never lost faith in God, just didn't go to church, just didn't pick up the Bible, but God was right there with me every step of the way.
I think that's a really powerful point to express here, is that even though you didn't read the Bible, you never lost faith.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So can you talk just a little bit about that? So for someone else who might be struggling with an illness or some other type of caregiving situation, what does that mean? Because a lot of times we equate reading the Bible with having faith.
Right, right. Faith is something that you really live out. And there were times I would just go back to a favorite verse of mine. One is Philippians chapter 4:13, I can do all things through Christ. Paul wasn't really saying I can do all things. In the context, he's saying I can endure all things, whether it's good or bad or the ugly.
So you were enduring.
I was enduring day by day. We both were.
Now, I think what I would want to know is, how did this change your relationship to each other?
I mean, it changed in many ways.
Oh, my.
She always reminds me, you became my caregiver. And there's not a lot out there for caregivers. I was still the husband, but my role shifted a little bit.
And how did that make you feel? Like, did it make you feel a little guilty, or did it make
very
you
much so, very much so. For those who know me well, you know, I'm the one who's the cheerleader, you know, and making sure everything's taken care of, and the one who's present for social events. And I felt somehow I was robbing my husband, my children, our church members of this opportunity to be lifted up, because I wasn't the one doing it anymore. So it was quite humbling for me, too. I had to just let go and...
So what was your main coping mechanism there? What did you go to? What place?
It's interesting. When I was first diagnosed, for a brief moment, the tears fell. And then, as Charles mentioned in the article, I said, okay, okay. And God gave me a peace that has not left me.
Praise God.
Since that day, 12 years ago. And, you know, I'm no superhero, but the fact that he speaks through his people, I mean, I've been, I feel extremely blessed. Folk have been there to nurture and care for us all along. So I've never felt lonely or, you know, how could God do this to me or abandoned. He's been right here with me.
What I'm hearing you say is, despite the difficulty and the stress and all of this that was happening, your faith, the relationship you had with God and
very much
people
so.
Of God has nurtured you and helped you and sustained you.
Yes.
And it goes back to what Charles said, that you were not reading.
Right.
But you know what? You, the reservoir that you had, you know,
exactly.
the experiences that
and
you
And God
had.
Didn't hold it against me.
Yeah.
Right.
Know, the fact that I did pick up my Bible.
Yeah.
Because he knows your heart.
Exactly.
And so what I'm getting from the both of you is that this is faith in action.
Yeah.
This is real faith.
This is the real deal.
Yeah, this is not a faith that says, okay, Lord, you've, you know, dropped a bundle of money on my doorstep and
right.
so I'm blessed.
That's
I mean,
right.
This is faith that says, in spite of, as you both said, we can make this work. And I think what we've always admired about the two of you, we've been blessed, so our audience knows, to be friends with you for many years. We all started in ministry together in New York City long time ago. But throughout your ministry, I think we've watched you. And with this illness, I've never seen either one of you act like, oh, poor us. Even those days when I saw you in the wheelchair or with the walker, you were always positive.
And what some folk don't realize, and I didn't put in the article, she almost died. Yeah. We had to draw up a will. I mean, that's how deep... This guy, the doctor said, listen, you need to go home, have a meeting with your attorneys, draw up a will, because I don't know
what's going to happen.
What's going to happen.
So there were lots of unknowns.
Lots of unknowns.
I would like to, just a little bit, go back to your relationship. I mean, your husband and wife, and you were in the middle of life. What was the most difficult shift that you had to, or reality that you had to come to grips with?
The reality that we came to grips was, and continuing to come to grips with, this is the new normal. You cannot rewind and go back and live in the past, or you'll become very resentful. This is where we are, and we have to move forward. So it's our new normal.
Well, I like that point that you're saying that you can't go back. So it sounds like you have to, almost in a way, keep reminding yourself. That whatever dreams, whatever expectations you had of your relationship, you're taking it one day at a time.
That's it.
I think that's exactly what it's taught us, to live in the moment And I have a friend who reminds me every couple of days. She says, Maureen, are you looking for that ray of sunshine? Mm.
Oh. But yeah. She is that ray of sunshine to so many people. That's been her ministry throughout our marriage, and especially now that she can't move as much as she would like to. She brings life to people on a one-on-one basis.
So two things I want to speak about before we end this segment, and that is financially.
Yeah.
You took a hit. You quit working.
She made more money than I did. I mean, yeah. Let's just be honest.
Yes. Because
yeah. mm-hmm. she was in management.
That's correct.
Yeah.
How did you adjust to that? How did you trust God? What happened?
I think that was a God thing.
There was.
Seriously.
People would come to us out of the wild blue and just put an envelope here. Her coworkers put their, days off together?
Vacation
time. And put them in a bank for her because there was no money coming in. Yeah. You know.
So God took care of you.
Definitely.
And your girls, your family.
Never dropped out of school. They continued to go to college, high
school. Grad school.
All graduated.
Your girls have been very successful.
Oldest daughter has a PhD. Yeah. Middle daughter has a master. Well, last two both have their masters.
Yeah, so. Praise God.
Praise God.
We don't drive a new car, but that's all right.
That's okay. That's okay. Well, thanks for watching today. And thank you, Charles and Maureen Tapp, for sharing your story and the powerful lessons. That's all for today's Real Family Talk. Join us again when we'll talk more about strengthening families and inspiring hope. Meanwhile, to watch more of Real Family Talk, please visit our website listed on your screen and share your thoughts with us on Facebook and Twitter.